Young people hitting the road, pushing a message of gun safety and political involvement. The Road to Change rally comes to town this week as the Parkland student activists speak out here in Jacksonville. Good Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. We are live, as always, from Studio 5 at 9 for First Coast Connect here on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, the young people's push to change America's gun laws and get more involved in politics. As we speak to the students behind Road to Change, you can get on the line now and connect at 549-2937. Then later, author Troy Mosley on the 70th anniversary of desegregation in the military and how that changed America forever. Plus, Culpepper, as the start of Jaguars training camp is coming up already. Can you believe it? All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour, the students of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, are coming to town. The Parkland kids, of course, have been involved in a nationwide voter registration tour called Road to Change. Their activism stems from the deadly mass shooting they survived at their South Florida high school and their calls for increased gun safety in America. As they work to register more young people to vote, young people here on the First Coast are joining their movement. They'll all be part of a block party this Thursday at the Jacksonville Landing that will mix in some fun with voter registration. We're talking about this right now with a couple of young people involved. Mia Cleary, a recent graduate of Ponte Vedra High School and one of the student leaders of March for Our Lives, JAX. She's here in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also here in studio, Kaylin Kindy, who's an organizer with March for Our Lives, JAX. And full disclosure, she does work part-time here at WJCT. Kaylin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the student activism behind Road to Change and the push by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School survivors to register more young people their age to vote just ahead of the August midterm elections? What are your questions about this? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. And weigh in as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. All right, Mia Cleary, you're a recent graduate of Ponte Vedra High School. You were one of the speakers at a March for Our Lives rally in downtown Hemming Plaza in March when we saw marches all over the country calling for safer schools, safer public places, gun violence prevention. And so you've been involved for a while. What prompted you to get involved in this movement?
I think it was the utter feeling that I felt the night that Parkland occurred. Like when my mom first told me that the shooting happened, I sort of like brushed it off and like went to the movies with my best friend, had a fun Valentine's Day. And then I went home and I started to read the stories. I started to watch the Snapchat videos. And it just seemed that my life became engulfed because I was just fortunate enough for it not to happen at my school. And especially in an area like Parkland, this, you know, relatively similar demographics to Ponte Vedra, like it was just a matter of luck and it not happening to me. And I think that feeling of going to school the next day and knowing that like I could have been the one, my friends could have been the one. And even if I wasn't the one, there's an entire school that now has to deal with this tragedy for the rest of their lives. And I just couldn't not do anything.
And so you got involved in what's become a national movement. It's coming to the Jacksonville Landing Thursday. Kaylin Kindy, you're involved with March for Our Lives as well. What's going to be happening this week in Jacksonville?
You know, we're going to continue the conversation, the much needed conversation about gun violence and gun violence prevention. And we're going to register people to vote and find common ground and work towards a solution and all have fun while doing it.
Right. There'll be a party atmosphere. It'll be something that you're hoping a lot of your cohort will come out and join. What would you both say to those who see all of this student engagement in politics in the wake of Parkland? And some of the kids from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas have become celebrities like David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez and Cameron Caskey. They've become household names. What would you say to adults watching all of this activism on the part of your generation who feel that you're being manipulated by those who seek tighter gun restrictions in this country? I'm just curious to get both of your responses to that.
Yeah, that's something that is brought up a lot by a lot of random people on my Twitter, like you're being manipulated. And it's just simply not the truth. If we had been manipulated, we would have stopped this a long time ago. We've put so much work into this, and it's not something that my adults, like my parents or a party, is telling me to do. I'm doing it because I feel so strongly that, you know, I don't feel that walking around your neighborhood should be a reason to get shot. I don't feel that going to school should be a reason to get shot. And I do it because I just can't not do it. Like, I can't just sit around and pretend like it doesn't exist when, you know, this is the most apparent threat for me. You know, if I literally can't go to school, then, you know, what am I supposed to do? So it's definitely not a game of manipulation. I'm doing it because I completely want to, and because I feel emotionally attached to this, and I feel like I have to do something. And being that I have a voice and I have the privilege to speak, I am going to speak.
Kaylin.
Yeah. I come from a place of experience, knowing how gun violence impacts you. You know, I was in a school shooting March 6, 2012 at Episcopal.
And that, of course, turned deadly.
Yes.
A teacher was killed in that event. So you were on the school campus at that time?
I was. I was in, like, the classroom nearest to where it happened. And so I heard those shots, and I just experienced everything. I experienced the tragedy and the loss, and, you know, the pain that comes even years after. It's something that changes you. And, you know, for people saying that we're being manipulated or that we're crisis actors or anything like that, I don't understand it, because quite frankly, like, this is a real problem, and it affects so many people. It affects everybody.
Gun violence is a uniquely American problem. Now, the Road to Change tour is taking 50 stops across 20 states all this summer with the objective of registering young people to vote and also turning up the heat on politicians your movement feels is not doing enough to prevent mass shootings. You're coming to NRA strongholds around the country, including Jacksonville, Mia. North Florida is certainly different than South Florida when it comes to the average voter's feelings about the Second Amendment. So what's your message, I guess, for North Floridians as they watch this movement come through the area?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a really big misconception of March for Our Lives is the idea that we want to repeal the Second Amendment, which is simply not at all the truth. We don't want to repeal the Second Amendment at all. We believe in everyone's right to own a gun. We just feel that if you're owning a gun safely, you know, how the reform wouldn't affect you. And gun sense laws just simply mean safety laws to ensure that, you know, people who shouldn't have guns don't get them. And I think that's a really big misconception to a lot of people that, we're not anti-Second Amendment. We're pro-Second Amendment. We're just also pro-safety. And I think that's an idea that, you know, the majority of, you know, sensible people in the U.S. can come behind.
Earlier in the year, the Parkland kids engaged in a pretty riveting confrontation with one of their representatives, Senator Marco Rubio, on a live CNN town hall, and they challenged him on these issues. He pushed back on some of the kids and said, regulating these weapons is more complicated than it looks. I mean, he said a lot more than that, but that was part of what he had to say. So let me ask you, Kaylin. So for people that haven't followed this closely, March for Our Lives is advocating for a specific series of gun safety measures. Can you explain what they are?
Yes, they actually have a five kind of part plan. I think they expanded it a little more recently. But you can go to their website, marchforourlives.com, and look that up. I think most of it is actually things a lot of people would agree on. I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of the opposition of March for Our Lives. And we agree on a lot more than we disagree. You know, we pushing for things like universal background checks or more funding for, you know, gun violence research and just safe storage laws, just things like that, you know, getting guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, like domestic abusers and people like that. So,
and as I look at the website on your prompt, here are the points March for Our Lives is calling for: universal comprehensive background checks, bringing the ATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms into the 21st century with a digitized searchable database, funds for the Center for Disease Control to research the gun violence epidemic in America, a high-capacity magazine ban. We've seen that technology used in a lot of mass shootings, and a ban on semi-automatic assault rifles. 5 points there. Do you agree, disagree? What are your thoughts about March for Our Lives and Road to Change rolling through Jacksonville this Thursday? Let's go to your calls now at 549-2937. George is in Ponte Vedra. Hi, George. Good morning.
Hey there. Well, the one thing missing from this discussion is all the medication that all these shooters were on. They were all on heavy doses of medication. So let's start with the root cause. Second, my question is pretty simple. Do you guys think that Trump is a dictator, President Trump? And if you do, then why would you want to give your guns away to a dictator? And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Mia Cleary, your thoughts about that caller.
Okay. So the first one you said was a lot of the mass shooters were on medications. I don't know if I fully agree with that statement. I do think that mental health is a separate issue that has to be addressed in our country. I have two siblings who are both have mental illnesses, and they are not treated very well in the state of Florida. Anyone that has a family member with mental illness knows that. But I think the conversation behind that kind of comes from, you know, a lot of people are like, let's give money to that. But I still don't see any help. My siblings still don't get very much help. So that's definitely another conversation that we are also trying to deal with at the same time. But I'm completely in support of mental health treatment. For the statement on if President Trump is a dictator, I think that is a little bit like sort of separate from the movement. And we wouldn't be giving guns to President Trump. You know, our law enforcement is a completely different topic. The JSO does not run directly through President Trump. So I think that that the notion is that, you know, our law, our safety, the people that are supposed to keep us safe would be able to get the guns out of hands of people that you wouldn't want having them. You know, if your daughter or, you know, your child was with someone who is domestic abuser, let's say you have a daughter who's, you know, married to someone who's domestically abusing them, would you want them to have a gun? And that's the whole idea behind this movement, is getting, you know, the guns out of people, the hands out of people that shouldn't have them. And so we can prevent, you know, not just mass shootings, but, you know, smaller shootings too. Any sort of violence that can be prevented is something that we really are striving for.
It's interesting. When we talk about all the facets of this argument, Kaylin, when people bring up the mental health issue, I think one point to make is that we're not unique in this country in that we do have people with mental health problems. Of course, we do have issues with adequately funding and treating mental illness. Many other countries also have that challenge, but they don't have our level of gun violence. They have the same proportion of mentally ill people. They don't have the same level of gun violence. So that's one thing. And then the other point that he made, when we talk about the Second Amendment, proponents of a strong, unfettered Second Amendment will say that they feel it's important that the civilian population have a right to bear arms in case they ever have to overthrow a tyrannical, dictatorial government. That's something that goes so deep in the American psyche, and I think it's why we've had this struggle over gun violence for so long in this country, because people, millions of Americans, feel that so deeply. So what would be your response to those who make the argument that in case we ever have to overthrow an overweening government, we need to be armed?
I mean, it really comes down to, honestly, like, we're not trying to take away your guns. I think that's a really, really important thing to remember, because in case you ever should need that for that reason, chances are your guns are fine. You're a law-abiding citizen. You're fine.
But let me clarify a little further. Those who support the Second Amendment strongly feel that these restrictions are a slippery slope to gun confiscation, to taking their guns away altogether. What's your response to that fear?
Yeah, I think it honestly, for me at least personally, highlights a deeper problem in the American population. If we feel so compelled that our government is going to take us over, you know, we have a system of checks and balances. So, you know, if President Trump is, like you said, a dictator, then, you know, we have different processes that we would hope would help in that situation that we would come to. And obviously, like, you know, we're not trying to take every single gun away from anyone. That's not our idea. That's not our message. But the idea that we need guns to overthrow a tyrannical government just seems sort of misplaced in our time period. And this is, again, just a personal feeling. I feel like it relates to a deeper problem that the American population has relating to guns. You know, if they feel so strongly that they have to have a gun all the time, you know, a gun to me sort of represents, you know, even if it's not what people use it for, it represents violence. You know, if you're protecting yourself, that's still a form of violence. And I feel like it just represents this distrust that Americans have towards the government. And it's not, you know, my specific job to bridge that gap of distrust towards the government. I mean, I have it too. I'm not the only person, but I just feel that there are better ways that I can ensure that my government doesn't go to this, you know, tyrannical state without the use of a gun.
Let's go to Mark in St. Augustine now. Hey, Mark, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Number one, I applaud the ladies for getting involved in politics and registering people to vote and all that good stuff. But I guess my question is, what percentage of their efforts are geared towards actually stopping these things from happening? And if, for example, in Parkland, there were numerous warning signs. Many people at different levels dropped the ball. Melissa, you just read off their platform, and nothing on their platform said anything about increasing school safety. And to me, I would be all in their camp. I would go down there on Thursday night if they said, hey, we are here to try and get the school so that they can fortify the school so the kids can be safe there. Right now, all they're talking about doing is creating more laws, and by that, it's the law-abiding citizen that is going to be the one that is following the laws. Those that want to break the law are going to find a way to do it. And I'm not, you know, condoning the school shootings or anything like that, and I feel horrible for the families that have lost loved ones and all that. But when I look at the efforts to try and stem that issue of violence in schools, it just seems to me that their efforts would be better placed if they were wanting to try and fortify the schools as opposed to trying to make laws that, in my opinion, aren't going to stop that many people from doing this kind of stuff.
Okay, Mark. Yeah. Okay. And after the Parkland tragedy, where 17 people were killed, Kaylin, the legislature did act. They did pass a measure looking at improving Florida's school safety. The prominent lobbyist in Tallahassee, Marion Hammer, with the NRA, said it was a travesty. People in support of your movement said it didn't go nearly far enough. But what about his call? What about his question?
While this movement did come out of, you know, a school shooting, we're trying to combat gun violence as a whole because we do recognize it happens in other places, not just in schools. You know, it happens in churches and concerts and restaurants and on the streets. So trying to just, you know, make our schools these impenetrable forces, you know, that'll might stop school shootings, but it doesn't account for any of the other gun violence that happens on a daily basis.
So in that sense, you see your movement is not necessarily just about improving school safety. You're really pushing with this voter registration drive for societal change. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in Jacksonville, there have been so many families that have been affected by gun violence, and it wasn't just in a school setting. You know, Latasha Hobbs lost her son, Maurice Hobbs, and he was just walking in a neighborhood in Jacksonville. So you know, it's not just about creating safer schools. And to that notion, creating safer schools, I guess, for affluent populations, because if you go to certain schools downtown, you know, they're already fortifications with metal detectors. It's about creating a societal difference on how we view guns and how we view gun violence.
Lots of calls about this, emails, tweets, Facebook comments. Here are a couple of emails. Jennifer writes, I want to let the students know I admire what they're doing and I support them. Joshua, where can I join this protest and is it ongoing? We'll answer that question in a minute. Cindy, I celebrate the Parkland and Jacksonville students for speaking out and activating our democracy on the road to change. That's Cindy on Twitter. However, on Facebook, Pancho writes, California, New York, and Chicago are gun-free states. And last week, Chicago had a march against gun violence committed by lawbreakers and criminals. Criminals never will abide by any screening or background checks. A good armed citizen is the answer. So those are the type of comments you hear when we talk about this debate. I also want to ask both of you a quick question about the National Rifle Association, which has gotten caught up in the ongoing probe of Russian cyber warfare and interference in our elections. Federal prosecutors unsealed charges last week against a 29-year-old Russian national named Maria Butina. She's a self-styled gun activist with long-running ties to the NRA, who's linked to Alexander Turchin, a high-level Russian government and banking official from President Vladimir Putin's party. Now, Butina had begun traveling the U.S. about 4 years ago and operated as a covert Russian agent, essentially infiltrating the NRA in order to advance the interests of the Russian Federation. And there are ongoing investigations into whether the NRA funneled money from Russia to conservative interests in this country. Is that issue coming up as you engage in this voter registration drive? And does your organization have a position on this as it relates to what you're doing?
I think, okay, so I wouldn't say that it's come up, it's definitely come up, but I wouldn't say that it's come up for Jacksonville specific purposes, but for the national, it has definitely gained a lot of, notion. I think that the NRA board does not speak for the NRA members. So what the NRA board has concerned in its scandals don't speak for the many NRA members that I am very sure are very law-abiding citizens. I have nothing against a lot of people in the NRA itself. I just think that it highlights the sort of misrepresentation and scandal that the NRA itself on the top officials have gotten itself caught up into. And, they're going to have to, eventually untwine themselves. And hopefully it's, for them, not an interest in the U.S., but I would hate for our president to have been elected with money from the Russians. Yes.
We've also seen Sacha Baron Cohen sort of mock Second Amendment supporters with his new Showtime series this month, Who is America?, where he duped supporters of the Second Amendment into taking part in these interviews and setups on his show to make them look foolish, essentially. I don't know how closely you followed that, Kaylin, but this issue, which is a deadly serious issue, has come in for some mockery from this guy who is a notorious prankster. Did you catch that? And what did you think about that?
I have not followed that at all. I personally, I don't agree with, regardless of what people's stances are, I don't agree with making a fool out of somebody for their beliefs. And mm-hmm. I'd rather just sit down and have a conversation about it and work out our differences and find common ground. Mm-hmm. And especially for something like this movement, that's what we're going to have to do. And that's what we've been doing and will continue to do. As far as he goes, he can do what he wants, but just
not your style. Okay. Yeah. Peter at the beaches. Hey, Peter, how are you? Good morning.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Welcome back, Melissa. I have not heard the whole show. I really do think that your two speakers need to educate themselves more on these issues. So, for instance, if someone says, I need my firearm to overthrow a tyrannical government, then the response is, well, will your 9mm with two high-capacity magazines serve you well against the 1st Armored Division? You know, the argument just makes no sense.
So, in other words, you think that is magical thinking, Peter. Is that right? You think that it's magical thinking to think that an individually armed person could overthrow the U.S. military. Is that right? Yep, we lost him. But that's the basic point I think he was trying to make. Okay, AJ in Arlington. Hi, AJ.
Hi, good morning. And just want to say thank you to your guests for being young and standing up. This is AJ with Mad Dads. My question is, we have a high rate of gun violence in inner city. So far this year, we're over 55 homicides. And I just want to know, what are they going to do to address those issues in the inner city with guns?
Okay. Yeah. And you brought that up a little bit a minute ago, Mia. But as you pointed out, you go to an upper middle class suburban high school, or you did, Ponte Vedra High School.
Yeah.
High schools in the urban core have already had enhanced security for a long time. And as AJ of Mad Dads pointed out, if you're a kid who lives in, say, on, say, Jacksonville's northwest side, gun violence is routine. And so this is an issue that I think your movement is addressing as well. But can you explain a little bit more where you are on that?
Yeah, so I would say the first biggest step for us, other than just gun violence, is ensuring that a lot of the survivors of gun violence in those affected areas are getting the help and the support that they need. That's of the utmost importance. But going beyond that, there has to be specific laws for, you know, every different county, every different city within the state that addresses those issues more specifically. Obviously, that comes with different background checks. I know this is, you know, this is something specific to, let's say, Chicago, where the African-American population is disproportionately affected. So, you know, it comes into place that, you know, someone can literally cross the border in that state and go and buy a gun and then drive it back into Chicago very, very easily. And, you know, it just relates to, you know, even more gun violence that can be able to happen in the cities. And so going forth with that, it can't just be national laws and it can't just be state laws. It has to be very specific to how we can address gun violence in these areas that are disproportionately affected by gun violence.
Amy in Jacksonville. Hi, Amy. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Melissa. How are you doing?
Okay, go ahead.
My question is to Mia. My name is Amy D'Onofrio. I work with the EVAC movement. And we actually were originally asked by National to host the event on Friday. And we spoke with Mia and the March for Our Lives Jacksonville team. And I'll be real honest, I don't feel that the voices of impacted youth are being used to lead March for Our Lives in Jacksonville. And I guess my question would be, kind of going off what AJ said, which is, how are you using your platform as an ally to empower the voices of those who are impacted, which in Jacksonville is predominantly people of color, to lead this movement?
Sure. And that came up in the wake of the mass shooting in Parkland, Kalen, that students of color were sort of left out of the discussion and they're being left out now of this movement. What's your response to that?
My response to that is they're not being left out. We've made continuous efforts to try and bring them forward, to have their voices heard, and just share their stories so that we continue the conversation, and we continue the conversation with a person who has been affected and is being affected on a daily basis, and not just somebody who's been through a school shooting. So to that, you know, if you're hearing this and you are affected on a daily basis and you are someone like that and you want to come forward and you want to have your story heard, you know, reach out to us, because we're more than happy to work with you and give you a platform to share your story.
With all of that said, you do invite the public to come out to the Jacksonville Landing pretty much all day Thursday. Is that right? For the Road to Change event.
So it's actually on Friday.
Friday.
So it's going to be on Friday. During the day, we're going to be having a like music festival kind of voter registration drive from 11 to 3 at the Landing. And then in the evening, we're going to be having a town hall at UNF. And just going off of that, I know that a lot of times marginalized communities do feel left out of this conversation. And I solemnly agree that, you know, a lot of the movement has been led by predominantly affluent people. And that's something that I really hope we are able to combat in the future. Amy, I would still really like to meet your boys that you've, you know, spoken so greatly about. And we're hoping that, you know, with this community panel, we're not going to be having a lot of March for Our Lives Jax people on it, minus, you know, Kaylin. But we want to bring in more voices. And, you know, I don't need to be on the panel. You know, I have not been affected by gun violence. And so we want to make sure that we bring, you know, different members of the community onto this panel, and definitely bridging that gap with communities that, you know, are so often left out of this conversation. So, you know, Ron Davis, the father of Jordan Davis, who, you know, was shot at a gas station in 2012, and Tasha Hobbs, she will also be on the panel, among other people of the LGBT community, communities that we feel are, you know, can feel that they're being left out of the conversation. We hope to bring them to this community panel to highlight their voices. And we really, you know, moving in the future, we really do want to work with these communities, whether it's, you know, Jacksonville, Ponte Vedra, working with different inner city groups, you know, something that would be beneficial for them and also be very, for me at least, I feel would be very, very beneficial for a school that is predominantly white, non-Hispanic.
With all of that said, it's the Road to Change rally Friday at the Jacksonville Landing, Friday from 11 to 3, and a town hall at UNF in the evening on July 27th. Mia Cleary, Kaylin Kindy, both with March for Our Lives. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Later, Cole Pepper and the beginning of Jaguars training camp. But up next, how Harry Truman's executive order to desegregate the military 70 years ago this month changed America forever. That's next.
Looking to create harmony in your life and in your health? Join us for A Day for Her, formerly known as Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Bring the important women in your life and join us on a journey to learn how to shut out distraction and focus on those things that are important to you: friendship, confidence, and taking care of yourself. Tickets are $40 till July 15th. Info at wjct.org/events.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical for your safety in a weather emergency. Visit a public library to get your 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide. Stay informed with real-time updates at jaxready.com or download the Jax Ready app to also identify your specific zone and important information. Keep your radio on 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
What happens when you take this familiar piece of music and stretch it to last 24 hours?
It's surreal. It's like being trapped in the climax of the most incredible epic film for hours.
Chad here. This week on Radiolab, we take a closer look at time.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this month, July, marks 70 years since President Harry Truman signed Executive Order 9981, which desegregated the military. With the stroke of a pen, Truman sparked social change for a country in the throes of racial injustice, Jim Crow, and widespread bigotry. In his new book, local author Troy Mosley writes that many would be shocked to learn that Truman's then very controversial executive order was in response to atrocities committed against black servicemen by prejudiced police and racist mobs. And there's a lot more to unpack inside the pages of Mosley's new book, Unwritten Truths, The Armed Forces and American Social Justice. First Coast author and veteran Troy Mosley joins us now in studio with more. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And it's interesting to think back 70 years to the day Harry Truman signed that order desegregating the military. It was a very different country back then. And
Absolutely.
It was seen as radical
Absolutely
for
was.
Truman to do this.
Right, right.
And that's what sparked your interest, I guess, in starting this book?
Sure. I'm a retired Army lieutenant colonel, and I come from a military tradition. My father served in Vietnam, a Vietnam-era veteran. He got his commission at Florida A&M University. So the military has always been a part of our family. And with that, I was aware of his own struggles with race as this nation grew out of the civil rights struggles of the 1960s. And we look back to see how far we have come. But that journey began in the 1940s when President Truman, himself a World War I veteran, was witnessing a repeat of what happened following World War I and World War II, where these service members who fought heroically for their country came back to a nation that wanted to subjugate them and deny them the rights guaranteed in the Constitution. So when President Truman had the opportunity to effect change, he did so. He did it in a very thorough and systematic way. He commissioned a panel of academians and business leaders to study the issue. They came back with a report called To Secure These Rights. Mm-hmm. They outlined 35 points of interest, one of which was a federal crime outlawing police brutality, mm-hmm. which he chose not to adopt. But when he did sign the desegregation order, it caused an uproar. It was in a campaign year. The Southern delegates of the Democratic Party literally walked out of the convention when he announced his intention.
This was in 1948.
In 1948.
July 26th, this week, 1948.
Yes.
You know, and what the uproar, we saw that decades later with Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the inclusion of gay and lesbian uniformed service personnel in the military. That caused a similar uproar
exactly.
just a few years ago. But what we see over and over again in this country is that as the military goes, so goes America. In desegregating the military, Truman got the nation on a path toward dismantling Jim Crow and just egregious racial injustice in this country because people saw integration working in the military.
Exactly. You are so spot on. Truman's actions were 6 full years before the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus the Board of Education that separate but equal was unconstitutional. And the military has grown from its times. Even within the ranks, they resisted the executive order. But to your point, the military has learned that the greatest common denominator is when we serve our country in uniform. Regardless of what walk of life, what region of the country, we're all equal when we put the uniform on and we raise our right hand to support and defend the Constitution.
We've got a call about the anniversary of Truman's desegregation of the military 70 years ago this week. It's Keith in Riverside. Hey, Keith, good morning. You're on the air. Hi, Keith, you're on the air. Ah, we lost Keith. Give us a call back, Keith. But what's the most common question you get asked about this when you go and talk about this topic?
I think the most common question I get is, that's nice, but what's the so what? What's the takeaway? Why is this relevant to me today? And as you pointed out, it's relevant because the military has grown to embrace the ideals of equality of opportunity and inclusion. Don't ask, don't tell, which seems like an awkward compromise. It was. President Clinton wanted to allow homosexuals to serve openly. The mm-hmm. political resistance pushed back, and we got Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But it was a step in the right direction because for the first time ever, gays and lesbians were not persecuted for their sexual orientation, and they could serve their country. Several years later, under the Obama administration, they said, you know what? This is silly. Someone should be able to come to work and fully disclose their life, their loved ones, their significant others without fear of retribution. And the military evolved to do away with that policy as well.
And we have Keith back on the line from Riverside. Keith, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, I got cut off. I'm really fascinated about this book. Wanted to know where I could get a copy. But I wanted to point out that when President Truman desegregated the armed forces, each branch approached it in a different way. The Navy essentially ignored that order for decades. And it was very difficult for blacks joining the Navy to advance or really to get a fair shake for a long time until Admiral Zumwalt became the chief of naval operations in 1970. Jacksonville, and as society goes, so goes the Navy. But in the South, most people pretty much ignored that. If you were a black serviceman in the South, you pretty much faced the same Jim Crow once you got out of the area of the military sphere of influence. Jacksonville, Charleston, and a couple places in Georgia were considered unsuitable for assignment of black personnel by the Navy until the middle of the 50s.
Thanks for that. That provides some historical context, particularly for this military part of the country. Thanks, Keith, for that.
Keith, you are absolutely correct. Each of the services had their own internal struggles with how to implement the policy of integrating the armed services. It was under the Kennedy administration that the Gazelle Commission was established, and they studied the impact of the armed forces in their local communities, particularly in the South. And federal laws were passed to prohibit businesses that discriminated against service members and their families from participating in the benefits of government contracts and other federal assistance. So thank mm-hmm. you for that point. That is spot on.
Bill is in Mandarin. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I think it's somewhat interesting that even though the military can sometimes be quite strict, that the history of militaries for the longest time, going back to Greek times, was also a place where a person coming from hard times and underclass could rise and improve his lot quite a bit, in some cases become a ruler of a nation.
The military is the great equalizer, sure. Yeah, my own dad is an example of that. He was able to go to the Air Force Academy on a scholarship before I was born. Thanks for that call, Bill. Troy. And by the way, people that want this book, just go to unwrittentruce.com. Your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are the military has definitely shaped social justice in America. We are better off for the struggles that they advanced. When we look back to see how far we've come, and I encourage people to continue to be involved politically in your local community, not just the national elections, but that's how change comes about. It comes slowly, but it only comes when we are sustained and engaged with the process.
Troy Mosley, he's the author of Unwritten Truths, The Armed Forces and American Social Justice, this week marking 70 years since Truman desegregated the armed forces. Unwritten Truths. .com for more. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you, Melissa. My pleasure.
A quick break, and in a moment, Culpepper as the Jaguars start training camp. That's right after this.
On the next Fresh Air, writer and critic Michael Arsenault talks with Terry about growing up in Houston, black, Catholic, and gay, and learning not to suppress who he was.
Why would I do that? Like, what sense does that make to me?
His new memoir is I Can't Date Jesus, Love, Sex, Family, Race, and Other Reasons I've Put My Faith in Beyonce. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
By law, students with disabilities are entitled to a personalized education. But what if the school just doesn't have the resources?
Actually, what I had to really fight for was one-to-one tutoring and extra support.
I'm Molly Wood, how schools and parents are trying to make it work. Next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
The new book, Florida Made, is a ranked list of the 25 most important figures who shaped the state. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with co-author Laura Mize. We'll discuss Detroit, Florida, and talk about the Hard Rock Collection of Memorabilia in Orlando. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
The trade war is on. Many American business owners are holding their breath for a battle that could make or break them. But some say this economic chess game will benefit the U.S. economy and make us stronger. Which industries and jobs are most at risk as the trade war takes shape? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, can you believe we are just days away from the start of training camp? Yes, for the Jacksonville Jaguars. How about that? Culpepper says some players have already reported for camp. He's here with a look at that and the rest of the week's sports, news, and notes. Hey, Cole.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, we are in camp week Wednesday. This past Wednesday, the rookies and first-year players checked in, quarterbacks on Friday, and the rest of the veterans will follow this coming Wednesday. There are four key points I'm going to be looking for as training camp opens. First, and this seems simple, but is everybody there?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, let's make sure that everybody's going to be there. Dante Fowler likely will not be there for the start of camp. He was placed on the physically unable to perform list with an unspecified injury. Fowler also is suspended for the first game of the season after an off-season incident last year. They finally came back with a ruling from the NFL, so he'll miss the Giants game. But we'll see if anybody else misses time early on in camp. Secondly, does everybody look like they took care of themselves in the off-season? Once upon a time, guys would use training camp to get into shape, but
now
no
they
more.
Gotta be in shape year round.
Be in shape year round, and if somebody comes in and they're not in shape, particularly on a team as deep and talented as the Jaguars, they're gonna be left behind in a hurry. Third, we expect to hear from Fowler on Thursday. I want to hear where he is on the suspension and how he's going to approach training camp. It's a big year for him. Remember, he can become a free agent after this year, so I'm curious to see what he says and if Marcell Dareus talks about his legal situation as well. And finally, always interesting to see how the rookies look at this point of the year. For most, their heads will be spinning for the first week or two of camp, but I'm going to be keeping a close eye on the guys who are likely to play a contributing role, Taven Bryan, DJ Chark, Ronnie Harrison, the first three round picks. I want to see if those guys cannot look completely lost early on. And of course, it all starts on Thursday.
You know, there's so much excitement as football season's getting ready to begin with the fans, I guess, just hoping we see another amazing season. Can they keep that momentum going?
Well, I think so. This is a very good team. And, of course, a lot of it rests on some young players taking that next step for sure. I do think it's interesting. We've seen a couple of guys in the national media make the Jaguars their Super Bowl pick to go to the Super Bowl and represent the AFC. I just saw a story this morning from our friend Pete Prisco, former Times Union writer, now writes for CBS Sports, who predicted every game in the entire season, has the Jaguars predicted as 13-3 and the top seed in the AFC and the AFC champion. So we'll see if it plays out. But the expectations, while they've always been high internally when the season begins, everybody's undefeated, everybody's got a shot. Externally, the expectations for the Jaguars are higher now than they've been in a decade. And there are some open practices that fans can attend, a total of eight, including Thursday and Friday this week at 10:30. And then Saturday, if you're a season ticket holder, you can go to the 6:30 practice. Free to attend. You have to register online, though, at Jaguars.com in advance.
You just go there, register, because that's right around the corner. Also, you were up in Atlanta last week for SEC Media Days. What are your thoughts about that?
I spent a little bit of time with Dan Mullen, the Gators head coach, for the first time. And one of the things that I came away thinking of Mullen is it shows that he's a guy who's been a head coach in the SEC before. He was at Mississippi State previously. He was an assistant at Florida before that. But it shows he's a guy who obviously has an operating philosophy and a plan for what he's doing. And first-year coaches, head coaches who come into this league don't always know what they're getting into. He does. And I think he's got them heading in the right direction. I also talked with C.C. Jefferson, the defensive end, thought about going pro last year in the former Baker County product. I had a chance to ask him what kind of changes he's seen with a new coach and a new culture.
This is a high-energy culture now. You know, there's never a dull day with this coaching staff or these players. You know, there's always something new that keeps you on your toes. And I think that I just have to just keep practicing what I preach, man. You know, I say I want this and I say I want that. I just got to keep going out and working for it. And like I told him, just keep showing my teammates that it's going to be hard, but if you want it, you really got to go out and get it. And so far, so good, man. It's been fun, you know, very high energy, and we just love what Coach Mullen and staff brings to the table.
That's C.C. Jefferson again, a guy who's going to be very key for that Gators defense. Mullen, by the way, said that his goal every year is to get back to Atlanta in the SEC championship game. That would be a huge accomplishment the first year. He'd have to get past Georgia. The Bulldogs were the runaway pick by the media as the team to win the SEC East. Kirby Smart, of course, his team within a play of winning the national championship last year. They have to replace some key players, including three who were drafted in the top 35 picks of the NFL draft. The thing about Kirby Smart, you can really tell his time with Nick Saban was pretty apparent. He's kind of cut from that cloth, very matter of fact when he talks about it. But when talking about the expectations, he said that expectations at Georgia have always been high. And what happened last year isn't going to do anything to dim those. The media, by the way, picked Georgia and Alabama to meet in the SEC championship game with Alabama picked to win it. Those actually were my picks as well when I voted with the media poll. So we'll see how it plays out.
I'll go by Cole's picks. How about that?
And I had Florida second in the East, by the way, which was not the chalk with the rest of the media.
All right. Last but not least, let's talk about the British Open and Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Tiger Woods, part of the story. Francesco Molinari, certainly a big part of it. He became the first Italian to win a major, and that's big for Italy, but for golf. With Tiger at one point having the lead at the British Open on the final day, tied for the lead. It wasn't that long ago it looked like Tiger would never win another tournament, much less a major. But now he looks like a guy who's close to having his game back where it needs to be. Winning at the British Open may be his best chance because those courses aren't as long typically as some others. And as he gets older, once upon a time, he was a long hitter. Now he's going to have to contend with guys who can hit it 30 yards past him. But look for Tiger to win another tournament at some point this year. And I think he can get back to winning majors at courses
that suit him. That'd be exciting to see.
Been quite a story.
Catch Cole just about every night on our news partner, News for Jax, WJXT, and follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
1A's up next with a look at how Trump's new tariffs are impacting U.S. businesses. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.